Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Dirt Talk podcast. As always, I'm your host, Aaron Witt, for better or for worse. Today we have a guy who moves dirt. That is what he told me to say. His name's Pat Allen. He is an operator for New Era Excavation in New Hampshire. We've had Mr. Tom Gardocki on as well with New Era. He started New Era with his partner, Craig. And then they hired on Pat. Pat, when did they hire you? Like a year ago now?
It was August of 18, I think. Yeah, 18 to 19. Yeah, it's been a year and a half.
And you were their first hire.
Yeah, I was their first hire.
And has that turned out to be a mistake for them?
For them, I hope not. For me, no.
Okay, good. Just checking. Tom made sure to make me check on that.
Yeah.
Just random employee satisfaction surveys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get those every week. I think he sends one out. He's like, I want to know what the employee status, you know, how the employees are. And I'm the only one, so he only gets my info. I don't know why he does that.
It's all about good culture.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're an operator, and one of the biggest pieces of feedback I've gotten on the podcast is, you know, oh, you have all these business owners on, but you should really talk to operators. So we're listening to the feedback. Pat is the best I could do. So.
Oh God, there's so many better. I mean, you got to work. You're working down from Garrett, but you skip a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're going to have to backtrack here. It depends on how today goes.
Yeah. You got a big range you're working in now.
So this is just to prove that we are heeding people's feedback. So you're welcome, those of who have given me that feedback. Now, Pat, you are an operator. How did you get into the operating world, and how did you start out in this whole circus?
So, like, if we bring it back all the way back.
Yep.
My family, my father and my uncle own a big, large union drywall and metal stud framing company. So since I was like 12, I've been on jobs with them, lugging drywall and framing metal studs and pretty much just doing the stuff that a 12-year-old does when they're working on a heavy construction site. You know, telling people that you're actually 18, even though you don't even look a lick of 13.
Yep.
So just been out there. And I mean, school was just not easy for me. You know, I struggled with, I have ADHD and I have some learning with disabilities, like, hey, nothing major, but, you know, you have this, they call it an individualized learning plan, something like that, that, like, they help you. School tries to set you up so you can learn better, but in reality, it just, sometimes it just makes your life a little bit more miserable.
Yep.
And it just wasn't my jam. School was just not it. And I didn't fail anything, but came close to a lot of them. You know, like, I had a lot of sit downs with teachers at the end of the semester going, if you don't do this, you're going to fail. So, you know, just school wasn't my thing. But then you sit down with the guidance counselors and they're like, you got to go to college. You're not going to make it doing anything not in college and being stubborn and stuff like that, just not knowing what to do with myself. So, drywall it is. And my father, you know, God bless him, he's just like, he's a great tradesman, but he has no patience for, like me and him working together, button heads all day long. We're best friends, but button heads all day long. And he never, growing up, never really told me what, like, a carpenter makes, you know, during what they make a year. You know, you think, you look at tradesmen, and even though my father was one, like, you don't understand what they're making or how well they have it. So you have this stigma that they're not making shit, you know, they're just the bums, which is sad. You don't want to start off like that.
Yeah. But in reality, they're making damn good money.
Oh yeah. And now that I've been in it for, been 15 years, like, yeah, things are going great.
Yeah.
But no one explains to you that everybody says you get out of college, you're gonna get this great job, and you're going to make all this great money. But until everybody gets out of college, you see your friends spend 4 years and go, "Yeah, I'm making $10 an hour."
Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, I got out of high school. I went and drywalled for a little bit with my dad, and I ended up getting this kind of fake scholarship to one of those schools you see on Spike TV, you know, the automotive schools.
Yep.
And luckily I bailed out of that. And because I happened to talk to some operator out on a job, and I was like, I'm going to get a job in dirt. I love dirt. You know, who doesn't love equipment? And yeah, it blossomed from there. And you start to learn things from the people you work with.
Well, there's a few things here I want to point out.
Yeah, yeah.
The one, I feel like a lot of people in this trade have quote unquote learning disabilities. Like they did not do very well in school, but a quote unquote learning disability is something that hinders you from learning in a classroom, but that's not the only way to learn. And so it's just like it's this made up term that screws these kids from day one, that puts them behind because they don't learn like the traditional format. But everyone in this industry has quote unquote learning disabilities, and they're all doing just fine for themselves.
Exactly. I mean, I understand the school system can't try to individualize everybody's the way they learn. I get that. You know, they're barely making it right now as it is. But, you know, to say you're not going to, amount to anything because you're, you know, struggling to do algebra, there's got to be something where, people of, myself that didn't learn that way, I'm a more hands-on visual, you do it once in front of me, I'm just going to learn it, and I'm going to learn it better. And then eventually, my goal is to learn it better than the way you did it and more effectively than you know, you've done it. So it's just different ways of doing things.
Yeah, it started to frustrate me. And then the other point you said was about college, how you go to college and you get a great job afterwards and make a bunch of money, which is just flat out bullshit. I don't make the argument for or against college anymore. I think college is a great thing if you go into it with the right mindset. Hey, I'm going to take 4 years to learn more about myself and figure out what I want to do with my life. That's great. But if you come out of it expecting this great job and making a ton of money, that does not exist anymore. That does not exist based on what I have seen and what reality looks like. And then you have all these guys going into trades, making a killing, 18, 20, 22 years old, and then even out earning all of these college graduates their entire life. Like it's the operators, they still make more money than the majority of college graduates, you know, 30 years later. It's amazing.
But I mean, how do they sell college? How do you sell college to somebody? You got to tell them that they're going to make a killing and all the money they're going to spend. Maybe some people, and I'm sure you've seen it, some people need that college to realize this isn't for me. You know, they need to go there and go, wow, this isn't. But then they've already spent all the money.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, you get out of, for me, I got out of high school. I did some drywall stuff, talked to that guy. I ended up getting a job laboring for this local company for $8 an hour. So you start off and you're like, great, $8 an hour.
Wow.
Now all your friends are in college, or, you know, some of them are in college, and they're looking at you like, oh, you didn't go to college, you're making $8 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
When we get out, we're going to make $120,000. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, and you don't know the difference. But then $8 turned into 10, and 10 turned into 12, 12 turned into 14, and onwards, and we're doing pretty good nowadays. So my wife got a master's degree in social work, and I mean, she does very well for herself, but at the beginning, you know, you come out of school with $100,000 in debt, and she's making $8 an hour. So what's the difference?
I just remember there were a few moments where I was working construction over the summers, primarily while I was in college. I was just sitting in I think I've talked about this before, sitting in a job trailer on the railroad. It was 4 a.m. looking at what all my friends were doing back home, you know, just doing whatever college kids do. And I felt like such an asshole because it was like, man, I'm out here in a job trailer in the middle of nowhere working for not that much money. It's 4 a.m. It's like a Saturday because we work Saturday, Sunday. And I just worked last night. And you just feel like a total idiot. But like in which sucks. Like it really, that really bums me out. But then long term, you are just fine. Like you are just fine.
Yeah. But is that, like, that's the thing. Is there no way to explain that? Even though you can explain it until you're blue in the face that, like, I was fine. But some 18-year-old kid that gets out of school, he doesn't realize that, you know, or she doesn't, you know, like, there's no way to explain to a person, no matter how hard you work. Yeah, you work 50 hours a week for $10 an hour. Your friends have been partying, but they're just racking up debt right now.
Yeah.
And in 4 years, and I will say, I think, so, you know, they go into school at 18, usually they come out at 22. At 22 in the trades, you start to realize that. You start to realize, okay, I got a car payment now, and my friends are coming out of school going, what do we do now?
Mm-hmm. And I saw that when I was working as a laborer, I'd go over to my friends' houses and their moms would ask, you know, oh, so what are you doing? And I'd, you know, hey, I'm working in construction this summer, and they'd feel so bad for me. And they wouldn't get it. They're like, why are you doing that? And to me, it made sense, but to them, it made zero sense because that was looked down upon. They felt bad for me. It's like, no, I don't need you to feel bad for me. I feel bad for you because you've never worked and used your back to earn money. And there's just so much value. And that's the thing is, like, for these young kids, I think we have to sell the value of the doing the work itself, because the money is great. But if you're just looking at the money, you're going to burn out. It's the value of the work, the value of building things, the value of sitting there busting your ass for a day and looking back at, like, hey, I just did that. And that feels really good. Or the value of the camaraderie with the people that you work with. There's so much value beyond just the dollars that you can see almost immediately, that we really have to sell as an industry.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, I think when you first get into this career and these fields and any trade, basically, you look at it like, okay, I need to make money. But now as I've grown older, you know, to be able to drive on a road that I helped build or graded or drive by a building and you're like, I know where, like, the sewer, I know where the sewer service is here, or, you know, or just overhearing conversations, like your friends are buying houses and they think a leach field involves just a tank and the tank has failed. No, it's not the tank. It's the field itself. Like, you know, there's a field, that big flat spot where you guys are putting a patio there. In 10 years, you might be digging that up.
Yeah.
Because there's a leach field under there. So the knowledge, just knowing construction, you know, with my father's background in carpentry and in excavation, like, we built our house 5 years ago now. And I did a lot of the work. So that was just, and now I can look back and go, oh yeah, I remember when I hung the mantle here, or we hung the drywall, or did the foundation drain. I know where that comes out. There's so much more reward to the trades than just the money.
So you started out, you know, doing the basics, getting paid not very much money. How do you work your way into equipment? Because this is a question I'm asked all the time, is how do I get into equipment? And, well, start with a shovel in your hand, bust your ass, look for opportunities. So how did you do it? And that's a non-union answer. You know, union's different. How did you do it?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, like, where I'm from, the union, like, our state is not that strong. So it was never really an option unless I wanted to drive to Boston, which I have no want to do that. I did that doing carpentry. But so I started off running the shovel for this company, making $8 an hour. And I was working with this supervisor who was a larger man, so he didn't get out of the machine very often. So I essentially got to learn how to do the layout because, you know, for him to pound steaks, he'd have to get out of the machine. He didn't want to do that. So, you know, he'd be like, kid, go pound a steak in there and then learn the grades. The grades are really important when not only, like, laboring, but knowing where your cuts and fills are, or in excavation, it's engineer's math. Most of us run in tenths. So learning the tenths, not because that's the most difficult thing in the world, but just learning as much as you can about grades and pipe work and how to shovel. If you can efficiently shovel and rake, you can transfer that over to the machines at some point. And then also I worked with a bunch of other kids my age. So when somebody needed to run the loader, we would literally wrestle for it. You know, this is just, it was just good fun, but I'm getting the loader. No, you getting, I'm getting the loader. And we'd literally wrestle. No one fought, but who could get to the loader faster? So then the more machine time you have, you know, you start with, usually you start with a loader, skid steer, and then, oh, a bulldozer showed up for the job. And the guy I worked with, he didn't really like running bulldozers. So go push dirt, go push dirt. And then, oh, the excavator's freed up during lunchtime. Oh, and the trucks are rolling in. Why don't you try to load trucks? It's just, it's your want. It's your drive to be in the equipment, I would say. And also, there's some talent involved. There's guys out there, you can look at them and be like, you've been in this for 10 years and you still don't get it. It's sad. You don't want to tell somebody, I don't think you're ever going to make it as an operator. But if there's something about it, maybe hand-eye coordination, I don't know.
There are talent. Talent does play a role, and
yeah.
I guess what I'm hearing, for the sake of clarity, is that someone didn't just walk up to you and say, "Oh, hey Pat, oh, you want to be an equipment operator? Well, here's the keys. Go have fun, buddy." You had to create the opportunities for yourself, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah, there could be somebody that's listening to this right now, and they that's how they got on. Somebody said, "Here's the keys. Figure it out." Sure, that's happened. There's no like set. I guess I've gotten that question before too. You know, how do I get an equipment? Well, there's no set way. There's different opportunities too. Somebody quits. Oh, somebody's got to run that piece of equipment. You grew up on a farm. Okay. Well, you know how to run tractors. You can run. I've seen that happen. They got like around here, there's a school. There's an equipment school. There's just different ways of doing things. And when you get that question, whether it's DM, or out on the job, how do I get an equipment? There's just no answer to it.
No, but 9 out of 10 times, it's start with a damn shovel in your hand.
Exactly. I mean,
based on what I've learned. And I think that's why our industry is struggling right now to get people, is that there's no set way to do it. And we've conditioned kids to just follow the set way. And that's what school does. You know, okay, you go into the next grade and this is what you study, and college, this is how you apply, and these are the courses you take in for this major, and then you go to the career fair and okay, here are the companies that you can apply for, and everything's laid out for these kids. And then construction, that's just not the case. Nothing's laid out. And so that's it causes problems with this younger generation, because they've been conditioned to just follow the path that's laid out for them.
There's nothing wrong with being a career laborer.
That's a great point.
There's nothing. There is guys, I've worked with them, and it's not great that a lot of the career laborers you look at, and I'm not generalizing, but there's a lot of them that you look at them and go, okay, they don't have a license. They have an issue with substances. They, you know, there's a lot of them out there. But there, when you work with a guy that just is happy being a laborer and wants to learn as much as they can about being a laborer, they're some of the most useful people out on the job. You know, when you work with a good laborer, they can just make a job go so much simpler. You know, you always try to get as close as we can with the machines to like ease stuff up for laborers. But when you got one that's like, hey, quit like fucking around trying to get in this corner, it's going to take me 3 minutes to shovel this while you keep going doing this, there's just nothing better than it.
Well, and they're sold as like the low man on the totem pole, but especially in positions like pipe crews and this and that, these guys are so skilled, and there's an enormous difference between a skilled laborer and an unskilled laborer. And
Like,
that's how I grew up. I grew up around these guys that have been laborers their entire life. That's what they did. And they were absolute studs. I mean, they made the company so much money. They moved so damn fast. And I think that's another fallacy that's being sold right now, especially online in this world, is that like everyone can move up. So everyone can become the boss. And it's just, it's irrational, because most people don't really necessarily want to be the boss. Like, you don't, you don't need to be the boss to do something with your life and go create the life that you want. And then secondly, not everyone has that skill set. You know, some people have the skill set of being a laborer. Some people have the skill set of being an operator. It's just a different skill set. And if you don't have it, it's fine. Like, you don't need to be the owner of a company to have a great life. I think it's just a bill of goods that's not exactly aligned with reality that I've seen lately.
Oh yeah. I mean, so to get back on my timeline there, like what I did. So I left that smaller company to go to this bigger housing development company. I went there right before the crash started, but I started to work with some better people. And the supervisor I had, this guy, Bill, who I still talk to almost weekly, he's one of those guys. He can run equipment, but he is 64 years old and would still rather be down in a hole swinging pipe than, you know, digging pipe. He knows, the guy's a bull. And I remember my first day out on the job with him. We're doing layout, we're pulling center line. And this is before GPS, but the company didn't have GPS. So it's pulling offset. And it was like 100 degrees outside. And if you've ever worked out on like a new development, there's no trees, just you're in the middle of the road. And I was dying. I mean, dying. And this guy at the time was probably, 50. He just ran circles around me and laughed the whole time. And I was like, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, I can't keep up. What an asshole. But you get to I got to know this guy, and he just eats being tougher than everybody else. Eats it. I've seen him eat a sandwich in his raincoat outside because he didn't want to get his truck wet, and he didn't want to take his raincoat off. So it's pouring rain. He's eating a sandwich. The rest of us are hiding in our equipment. He just, he called me, he called me Friday. It was 5 degrees. We were working, complaining that they shut his crew down because it was so cold. And he's like, I'm the only one outside. I should be the one making this call. That's the great thing. And like, there's so many different aspects of like this field that you can create pretty much anything you want.
I agree. And that's a great point. I think people lose sight of that a lot. Keeping on a timeline, you go to work in residential, and then you went to work for a big company, didn't you? It's at one point, and that's what you left to go work for where you're working now.
I hopped around a little bit. I went to Canada for a while, ran some big gear out there, plowed snow in Montreal. That was totally crazy the way everything's done up there. I come back and it's still like the recession. I meet this girl who is now my wife, and her father runs a big granite quarry, like quarrying curbing. So he's in charge of all that, and he hooked me up with a crushing company. They didn't pay well. It wasn't a great situation, but it got me working. And then I just bounced around a little bit. I went to another company that was, they call it like the Army. And they were incredible dirt movers. But it's a yell and scream day, yell and scream kind of company all day long. You know, the owner's truck pulls on the job and your heart drops. One of those, like, what am I going to get yelled at for today? And I went from, went there to just labor because I wanted a better job. And I went and labored, and worked my way up into a D10 during the winter, pushing coal. So that was interesting, but things just, I butted heads with some people coming out thinking I was better than I was, and it just didn't work out. So I moved to another big company and started as a bulldozer operator, essentially just running bulldozer. And they had two grader operators, and one of them had recently passed away, so they were down to one. They had hired a guy out of Vermont that just wasn't cutting it. And I was running the bulldozer in front of him, and the paving contractor pulled my boss aside and said, just let this kid just try it. Just try the grader. And I hopped in the grader, and the deal was, as I'm grading, Lynn, the older guy, would show up afterwards and just touch everything up, finish things off. And when he told me I was off the road, I would just park my grader and I'd just watch him. I'd chase him, grade stakes, everything. And I just learned from this guy. And he was an incredible grader operator. So just learning all the little tricks and just working with him, I eventually got pretty good. It was one of those like dream jobs. You know, everybody around here, grader, like out in California, those guys are, they're grading whole subdivisions, like the pads and everything. The material's perfect. But here, we're in the granite phase. Like, you're grading gravel, or you're not really grading anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked on that, and me and Tom have talked about this before. I don't know if you've ever, have you ever, like, gotten good at something so good that you're punished for it?
Yes. Yeah.
Have you ever heard that saying?
Yep, I have, and I've seen it. It's a weird phenomenon.
It is. So I'm grading, and Lynn finally retired. They had another guy, and when before the older guy, Lynn, retired, we were like a team. He'd take one side of the road, I'd take the other side of the road, we'd meet in the middle, and boom, done. Or I'd work night shift, he'd work the day shift, and we'd be done. You know, like if we're doing a weekend project, grading some parking lot that had to be done in a weekend. I'd grade behind the reclaimers, he'd come in, do finish, boom, we're done. And when he left, it got to the point where, like, okay, the other guy, he's not cutting it. So you're going to work all night, and then you're going to get a hotel. You're going to sleep for 3 hours, and you're going to work all day. Or we're not even going to call him in. You're going to come finish it. And it just got to grinding. I had a daughter at the same time. You know, it was starting to wear on me.
Mm-hmm.
And my attitude was changing, which I'm a pretty happy person most of the time, but my attitude's changing, and I couldn't do it anymore. And I thought about leaving for a long time. And at the same time, I was helping Tom do some stuff. I had helped him stump one weekend the year before. And he called me and he was like, oh, you want to run bulldozer on that same job for a weekend? And I said, sure, trade me your mini. I got some stuff to do at the house and I'll go run it for the weekend. So as I'm running the bulldozer on the weekend, jokingly, I had said, this would have been done already if I just came to work for you. And he, you know, he laughed it off. And about half an hour later, he called me and he was like, would you come work for us? And I was like, you know, this is what I have at this company. If you guys can match it, I'm gone. And it just worked out that way. And it worked out to the better. We're a 3-man band. They own the company. They treat me like, maybe not as an owner, but man, everything's an open book. I can ask them things. It's just revolutionary, like the way that we're doing things. And I couldn't be any happier.
Having that transparency and them sharing information about the business with you at an operator level, how does that help you be a better operator and do your job better?
Yeah, call me an operator, but like I run, like there's a job in Hampton right now. I'm sure you've seen pictures of it that I'm pretty much running. They've kind of left me alone there. It's complicated.
Yep.
But when I start any job, they print me out the whole bid sheet. They hid money where they're real tight to get, you know, there's some numbers there. Okay, we're going to a little tight here because we've got to get this, how we get the job. I know the quantities of the material I can use. And they just understand, you know, sometimes we'll sit down before a job, maybe not sit down, but talk about a job before I start it. And they have an idea of how they're going to do it. And then being so transparent, I can say, you know, what if we did it this way? We could save a step, or we could save a load of something. It just having all the information right in front of you and not hiding anything just makes things so much simpler.
Something I'm very passionate about, giving our people within our business all the information so they're empowered to make decisions. It's just something that's not common in the construction world, and it's always confused me as to why it's not, because like if you didn't have that information, how the hell would you effectively manage that project? Like you'd just be walking around in the dark and you could, it's not, you wouldn't be able to perform as well. But then, and then at traditional companies, then it's your fault for you not performing. But how the hell do you perform, and how do you win a game when you don't even know what the score is? It's amazing to me that more companies don't. And I know you guys are small, and I know it's different on the big big picture side of things, but it's still a no-brainer to share that information with everyone out in the field because they're the ones actually doing the work.
When everything's a secret, you think you're doing great. No, I only got 4 loads of stone on this job and I only got this material and I have this much labor cost right now. And then they look at it in the office and go, well, you're way over budget. Well, how did I know I was way over budget? I might have done something differently. It's not always about how they would do it. It's more the common goal of as long as it gets done in a timely fashion. You know, I remember getting yelled at the way the trucks on a different company, the way the trucks were dumping because it wasn't the most efficient way, in which you always, in your mindset, you learn, you always want to do the most efficient way, but it doesn't always happen that way.
No,
it's not always the most efficient way, but as long as the goal at the end of the day is reached, then, I mean, some people might say, well, then you lost money. Well, maybe we lost a little bit of money, but not everybody's miserable. It could be that.
People on the internet don't get that. They think it's black and white, and they just say, well, that's not the most efficient way. It's like, there's not necessarily a most efficient way with anything in this industry. There's so many different ways to do the exact same thing and potentially reach the same goal at the end of the day. But everyone wants it to be black and white. Like, nope, that's not the way I do it. It's like, well, okay, great. Yeah. Maybe your way is right. And maybe my way is also right. Like, there's not a right and wrong here. But people are so hell-bent on saying, nope, that's not the way I do it, so it's wrong. It's like, I don't know if it's necessarily wrong, man, because they're still making a ton of money. So I don't know. Making a ton of money is not necessarily wrong at the end of the day.
Yeah. The internet's brutal, though. I mean, you try to spread how happy you are. I'm always trying to be positive, you know, and not just things don't go negatively, but there's so much negativity in the world right now that we don't, you know, I don't want to be spewing more negativity. You post something and you're like, oh, look how cool this is. And they're like, well, why'd you do it that way? That was stupid. Oh, you're digging over your drives? Well, yeah, but you didn't see 30 seconds ago before this video that I got done doing something. I spun around and started doing something else. And there was no point spinning around the whole undercarriage so I can dig the quote unquote right way. Or, yeah, we have Encons and all these accessories and people, you're digging with that thing? Okay, well, you know, we know how rugged they are. We know when to take them off. Like, come on.
Yep.
Just tone it down a bit. We're not all at CATS proving grounds in the same exact dirt doing the same exact thing.
And there's some companies out there that have fooled people into thinking that everything is like a production setting where it's like, you're loading off of a bench in trucks and everything's perfect and the material's perfect. And it's so far from reality, from reality. And it drives me nuts that people think that that's reality.
Yeah. We don't have a D8 setting up the bench behind the excavator. You know, the excavator is building the bench as he's going, if we're even on a bench.
Yeah.
I think I've done one, since I've worked for New Era, I've done one bench cut, and that was this year in someone's backyard, and it only lasted 6 hours. You know, like we weren't on a bench for 4 weeks. You know, it's just like that's the only, everything's different every time. And then you get into ledge. So you have this perfectly set up area to dig the way you want to do it. And then you right over the ledge. Great. Okay. Change everything around. So it's not perfect. And then you get people going, should have bought this piece of equipment. You should have done this. And it's comical sometimes to listen or read the messages or the comments that we get. It's just really.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might work in Arizona, but it doesn't work here.
And traveling has opened my eyes to that kind of stuff. But Tom, I get comments all the time, but Tom, he's big on YouTube, and YouTube by far is the most brutal place on the internet for equipment videos. Like it's terrible. Those people, all they do is just rip you apart, it seems like.
I mean, it's not even me, but sometimes I'll go on Tom's videos and just read comments. It's horrendous. Instagram isn't even close to what the people say on that page. It's like, wow, you know. And then you click on their profiles, or you do a little, you know, little web sleuthing and figure out these people, and you're like, oh, sweet, you drive a tractor, or you know, you have a lawnmower. Lawnmower, and you're a dirt mover. Yeah, I don't know. It's craziness the way people think other people should do things.
It's funny. I mean, we see more of it than most with how much exposure you guys get, even as a small company, and then where we're at. It's just fascinating. So you're helping managing projects, running equipment, building stuff, working side by side with Craig and Tom. How old are you right now?
I'm 32.
32. So you got a lot of time on the clock. So what?
Yeah.
I mean, what does the future look like for you?
I mean, I don't see any reason to leave New Era anytime soon. So it's great to be on the ground level of this company, because they're in with the times. You know, Tom and Craig and I, myself, like we spend most nights sending pictures, Instagram photos to each other in this little group chat and being like, oh, check this out. Check out this hook lift. Man, how cool would it be to have a hook lift with different attachments? Or Craig goes nutty a little bit, because me and Tom are just all about the attachments. But, you know, like Craig, Vactors. Vactors are like revolutionary. Like everybody's going to have a Vactor. As the company grows, essentially we're trying to do everything as efficiently as possible with the least amount of people. Not because I foresee the company growing. I foresee that in the future, but, you know, what if we could eliminate some of the, I can't make it in today, I got the shit, or my car didn't start, and do it with more mechanical means, less labor, then, you know, as we grow the company, it'll be really cool to see, like, wow, they, you know, there's only, say, five of them, and they did this with a company next door. They got 15 employees, and they're doing the same amount of work. So that's the way we like to do things. We're tight, but we have fun. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having fun on the job.
It is cool to see how much you guys knock out with just three of you. And Tom, he has a whole other gig too. You know, he's like kind of like a half guy. It's amazing to see the projects you guys are taking on today and how much work you do with just only a few people. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, since his podcast, his parents have retired. So now he's full time.
Oh, no kidding.
So now
Whoa.
So now, like, there's three of us. And I mean, we have a lot of work backed up. But, like, last week or 2 weeks ago, we realized, shit, we need another tilt rotator because we only had one. So we're trading it in between the 316 and the 200. Now, I got the 200 locked up on a job in Hampton, which essentially it can't leave. And I need it to backfill or get into these crazy tight corners. And then you spend, it's funny, like, once you have the tail rotators, you spend a day without it, and you're like, oh, God, I could have been done already with a tail rotator. So we ended up getting to the point where Tom and Craig were like, we need to get a second one. So we got a second one last week. So now, like, two tail rotators, we're swinging around, and we're getting all kinds of stuff done. And having Tom, like, full time now, we're going to have the ability to take on some much different work and much bigger work. So that'll be coming up this year. You'll see people will start seeing some of the stuff we're getting into. And if things keep going the way they're going this year, I see some growth, maybe not crazy employee growth, but equipment growth and needs for the company.
Yeah.
So that'll be really, really cool. So being on the ground floor is just, it's definitely a dream. I know it's like, owning a company is a lot of people's dreams, but just being as involved as I am with their company, I get to be part of it without having the stress of owning it. I get to go home on Saturday and not thinking about the job.
And that's what I was going to say. Most people, they don't want to own a company. They don't really know what it takes and the bullshit you have to put up with. And it's just not the lifestyle a lot of people want to live. Like, you want to go home to your wife and daughter. And spend time with them and be able to just, hey, I'm going to turn work off. Where as if you're owning a company, that doesn't happen. And that's not a lifestyle most people want. They think they want to own a company because they want the freedom. They want the ability to enjoy in the spoils of building something. You know, hey, I want there to be a financial return for me if I'm putting in all of my time and effort into this. And they want some sort of security. But if you provide those things, which it sounds like you have those things at your level, you don't need to own a company. Like I think it's a misconception that you need to own a company to have all of those things that you really do want.
Yeah. I mean, it took me a long time to learn that, you know, but I have taken, since I've worked for them, I've taken more vacation time than they have, both of them combined.
Yeah.
You know, Tom travels, I mean, this year is a little screwed up, but Tom traveled quite a bit. The first year I was there for different things. A lot of it was prepped for ConExpo, you know, the competition and stuff like that. But in August, and it's funny because August is usually like go time. Most weekends in August, the past 2 years, I have taken 3-day weekends because that's where, like, it's the best for my family to have our little vacations. You know, we rent the lake house usually in August, and I'll take 2-3 days before Memorial Day or Labor Day. The Labor Day, which one? Yeah, whatever. Yeah, so I get to leave in August. You know, Craig will give me shit, but they don't. You know, they don't care. They, you know, they figure it out. That's also the great thing about them is like I can say, hey, I got a doctor's appointment next week. I got to leave at 2:00, and it's not like a, oh, well, come on, we were going to do this. It's okay, we'll figure it out. Most of the time. I would say 100% of the time. Because there's times that shit needs to get done, you know? And I get that. But I left the company where you didn't take a doctor's appointment till the winter. And still in the winter, it was like, well, we had you at the pit on that Wednesday in a month.
And I understand, like, schedules in this industry. But also, that is something that has to change. Like there has to be some level of flexibility because people have outside lives. Like people have families, people have things they need to take care of outside of work. Work is not the end all be all. And yet these construction companies, they just demand so much from everybody. And my generation, like we don't want to have to put up with that because there are so many other opportunities now that are a lot more flexible and do say, you know, hey, you do have a life outside of work and that's okay. We need to, I think that needs to change in this industry. We need to be more flexible with people's lives because it's just, it's starting to get out of control and making people, you know, making it mandatory to work 80 hours a week is not sustainable.
I mean, when I had my first daughter, my oldest, my wife was changing jobs and my mother takes care of the kids on Monday and Tuesday. So my wife's changing jobs and my mother couldn't handle Monday and Tuesday for some reason. I forgot what, but I was like, okay, in I think it was a month or 2 months, maybe 2 months notice, I am taking this Monday and Tuesday off. And it was I remember the owner of the company coming out and being like, seriously, 2 days off in September? Are you, like, what are we, who's gonna grade? Yeah. And I'm like, the other grader operator.
Yeah,
that's who's gonna grade. Well, you know, and to the point where he wanted to have me bring my kids down to the office and have the secretaries watch my child while I worked all day. And I was like, it's not, no. And like, and I think in his mind, that was a great idea. You know, like I'm going to provide him childcare.
Yeah.
But no, my kid's not going with some stranger from the office for 2 days while I go grade. My job's not that important. Like it's important, but it's not that important.
So, it is amazing. And that's not like a one-off thing either. Stuff like that happens all the time in this industry. And it's a bummer to watch because that's what leads to, you know, all the divorces that you see and the resentment and the substance abuse. And a lot of that that's kind of the contributing factors. They just don't let people live their lives outside of work.
Yeah. I mean, how many guys have you seen that like you have to go home and drink a six pack and, their wives, you know, they chose their moving dirt over their wives and their kids and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's all the time.
You know, yeah, everybody. So it's sad to see. It's terrible, but, you know, dirt isn't, I love dirt. It's my favorite thing to do, but it's not that important.
If the BuildWit thing doesn't work out, do you think I can get a job there?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you're always talking about how plowing so exciting. You come here tomorrow, I will quit you. I will talk to the owner of the landscape company there, the plowing company that we work for, and he will put you in a loader. Guaranteed. You can have the loader I plow, and I'll sit at home.
You know, Pat, maybe we can work something out here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 28-foot metal flap. Like, how you can bendy wings and all kinds of stuff. Like, you can have it.
That is a fancy plow.
It's a very fancy. Sometimes it's too fancy, but I love it. You know, that things like that, a brand new loader, that big plow, like, it makes plowing way more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Being where I used to be, like, being essentially locked into a site for 30 hours straight is just not really that amusing anymore. You know, when you're younger, you get that. And I see it. I plow with some kids right now that are the same way. But I've been up for 48 hours. Well, you know what? I'd rather just be home. You know, there's just like this hard-o, like, I've been up and I've been plowing since 3 days ago. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I slept in my truck. And I've done all that. I'm good.
The family thing probably changes everything too. Once you have a reason to be home, you're like, all right, you know, I would just rather be home than doing that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, know.
You might know eventually though.
Eventually. Hopefully not soon.
Well, you plow all these storms and then you get home and like, they're going to shovel the walkway. And like my father-in-law plows the driveway enough to like get my wife out to work and whatever, but then, you know, I sleep a little bit, I gotta fire up the tractor and plow the driveway. And then you think about it, it's just stuff that's gonna melt later. You know, we'll just let it be and it'll melt in a couple months and we'll never have to deal with it again.
Well, but, have you seen the real fancy homes with the heated driveways?
My neighbor has one.
Okay, yeah. That's the way to do it. And he's probably looking at you like, yeah, what an idiot.
Exactly. It's not like I live in a fancy development, but the neighbor has a 500-foot driveway, and it's every time I come home after a storm, it's wet, and it's like, great, thanks. I can't imagine. But I know, like, because we work on a lot of fancier homes for New Era, like a lot of fancier homes, and one of the houses we're doing now, they're planning on a heated driveway, and I know how much propane those burn.
Mm-hmm.
So he can have his heated driveway because I'm good. You know, I'd rather burn a little bit of diesel in the tractor than the amount of propane that I know he's burning.
Fair enough. But he's just sitting next to the fireplace, nice and cozy, just probably counting his money, like the propane bill, not a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm coming home and I'm bringing cordwood in the house to get the wood stove going and then and then falling asleep. And snow plowing is, there's a lot of people that love it. There's a lot of people that hate it. It's a blood sport, I'd call it, you know. White gold is, people call it white gold. It's not as cracked up as it seems to be. There's a lot of these, and some people might understand me, but plowing sickness, you get like this anxiety.
Yeah.
And you've been eating Sour Patch Kids and Monsters at 3 a.m.
Oh,
like,
God.
It's just not, I mean, that's not always the case, but it's just not normal.
Well, and to make it even worse, I see some people plowing while listening to this podcast, and I feel really bad for them then.
I mean, I usually put you on, you know, for a nap time.
Yeah. I was going to say, this isn't something to keep you awake. Jeez. And if you're using it as such, it's really bad then.
No, actually, man, your podcast is just such a great thing for this field and any trade. Like, do plumbers have a podcast? Maybe. Like, they should.
They should.
Because, like, just listening to you guys, even the business owners and you know, like, Jared McNeely, like, I didn't think I was going to like that episode. I'm not a dirt bike guy. But, like, just listening to him, and everybody's got this passion for this trade. You know, the guy that owns Bellwether, he wasn't actually in this, right? He wasn't actually a dirt guy or a logging guy. So, like, everybody just grows this passion for dirt or equipment. And it's just like the Instagram people. It's like you have this like just feeling of like, wow, these people are in it with me, and we get to share pictures and share our stories. Like, how awesome is that?
Well, the most exciting part about it for me is when my friends who have nothing to do with earth moving keep telling me like, yeah, now I see machines like everywhere I go. Like now I just get excited about seeing machines. I've never been like this in my life. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Like that's what happens here. And they're everywhere. Like you start to realize how dependent you are on this industry, and then you start to appreciate it more and more. So I like showing people that have nothing to do with this industry and will have nothing to do with this industry what goes into it, because then at least they have an appreciation for it. Because like my joke is like no one could do something as simple as taking a shit without this world. Like that is how fundamental we are to society. And once they understand that, there's this level of appreciation that they gain for these people out doing the work.
Like if you look around, there isn't anything that you see other than like nature itself, but the roads, the houses, the buildings, anything that we didn't move there for.
Yep.
So there isn't anything. And the amount of stuff that it's water, like think about how much work you do for water itself, not just water pipes, but drainage sewer. That's great water. Like everything is water. You have to build crowns and roads to get the water out. You look at the drainage in a parking lot. You got to get the water out. It's all grading things for water. And then you add like the building there and all the site prep. And as being in this trade, being able to drive around and be like, yeah, look how much dirt they move. Look at the cut in the back of that parking lot. You know, you don't see it from the road. It's road grade, you know, but then you're driving by a Walmart and in the back there's a 40-foot cut. Mm-hmm. You're like, wow, how much, where did they move all that dirt to? And what they have for iron here? And then you get into like, I love this. There's a couple Facebook pages of like antique iron and like for us, like New England construction and the Rockbusters page. And you can like see, like people will post pictures of like these companies that move dirt. Like, oh, there's that shopping mall that's, you know, in a couple towns over. And here's all the pictures of that company moving all that dirt. And it's amazing. Like who doesn't get all like gung-ho for seeing equipment move dirt? Like who doesn't? I don't care who you are.
It's man, woman, or child. That's what I say. It's exciting to anybody. That's why I like doing what I do, because I get to talk about it and it's so unique. People don't really ever think about it. It's just such a fun topic rather than like, I mean, no offense to accountants, but I would not have nearly as exciting conversations if I were marketing accounting firms.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You know, just the trades in general, to like anybody looking into this field coming out of high school or just wanting a change, even if it's not dirt work, like how cool is it to put your hands on something, say you did it, drive by that place or go in that building later on and say, I was here. I know where that pipe goes. I know that door, what, even like a carpenter, what's on the other side of that door? Well, I've been back there. The pool cabana thing we're doing in Hampton or on the beach, for those of you who don't know where Hampton is, I don't know why I keep saying Hampton. for us, like that place is going to be there for years to come. Like when my kids are 20, I'm hoping they go to the beach. And when they're driving by that monstrous house and this infinity pool, they're going to be like, my dad did all that. Maybe not. They'll be like, maybe they'll roll their eyes and go, my dad, every time we go by here, says, oh, he did that.
That's more likely. Yeah, that's the likely one. But at least they're even thinking about it. And what's even better is if you drive past a job that you did, pulling your fifth wheel on the way to vacation, like, yeah, I did that, and I'm pulling my fifth wheel going to vacation.
Yeah, yeah.
See?
I love being outside. So this field for me is great. Carpentry, like, I can do it at my house. I did it when I was younger. But, like, being outside here and just going for a ride on the roads, and then we'll take a random turn, and I'll be like, honey, guess who graded this road? Just guess. And she's like, you. And I'm like, exactly. I did it. I did this road. And then she'll go, why is it ride like shit? But I get DMs on Instagram, probably not as much as you or Tom or anything, but anybody that wants to ask me questions about this field, or I love answering those. You know, yeah, I get the I am job posts, but
oh yeah,
but who doesn't?
Oh yeah.
Or you get tricked. Have you been tricked yet? I was talking to one guy, you know, he's from Brazil, and talking about graders once, and how great graders are, and then he's like, can you get me a job? And I was like, you bastard.
Yeah. reels me in. Yep.
Yeah, reels me in. But, you know, I get just different people that I just love this field. They're ask questions. I love answering questions. There's no, you know, unless you're being kind of a dink about it and asking a question in that, why'd you do it that way? But, you know, how come you guys are hammering with a hammer, not a grinder? Like, well, because grinders don't work here. You know, I'll explain it, dude. Like, grinders don't work here. Trust me. I know a company that has one. It does not work on rock. The rock's too hard.
And that's an important distinction. You can ask the same question, but with a different tone. Like,
oh yeah,
you don't have to be an ass about it. You can just ask the genuine question. You're going to get a genuine answer, and you're better off that way than trying to assert your superior intellect by, like, criticizing by asking a question. Like, well, why the hell would you do it that way?
Instagram and YouTube, it's just a plethora of knowledge.
Yeah.
To see, like, the way people are moving dirt differently and go, hey, I saw this. Could we try this? And then, you know, especially Tom and Craig, they're open to it. The information, it's a little information highway. So how do you not get all jacked up and go, yeah, let's do it this way and see the world differently in the eyes of people around the country, around the world, and learn their tricks and trades and of trades and stuff like that. So, well, just for us, even local people, like, I follow a bunch of local companies, people that we'll probably end up bidding against. So, and it's great because I talk to some of them, you know, some of them will DM me and be like, what are your thoughts on the NCON? And I'm like, it'd be like, oh, talk to Tom. And they're like, no, you're the one, you know, you've only been there a year. Some people think Tom's sponsored by people. It's not really the case.
I've learned that. There's no money in advertising in this industry. If they're your competitors, do you say, no, NCON, like, it is the worst thing possible. This is such a stupid contraption. I would recommend that you do not get it.
Sometimes you want to. It depends on who you message.
Yeah.
most of the time, no. Like, we're all out here for the betterment of the trade, right? So if something's going to work, like, how do you say that's the stupidest invention I've ever run when you're running it? You know?
Like, yep.
It's always on the machine. We just bought a second one because we need it, you know, like, that we want it. So being better for everybody is what we should be striving for. Better for the trades, better for the people in our trade. And you see the companies, and you're right, I've heard you talk about it, these corporate profiles that are just spewing, we're the safest company in the world, and you don't want, you know, you don't want to work anywhere but here.
Yeah.
And we own safety. In reality, you lease safety. Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, it's great to watch, like, Sargent around here. They're out of Maine, right? And they do work in New Hampshire, but when they move into town, it's like, holy crap, Sargent's here, you know? So to watch them and know that they're company employee owned, and that they're doing all this awesome stuff for their employees, and, like, they have that Sargent school or whatever it's called. Like, how cool is that? And then you got other companies around here that are owned by multi-billion-dollar corporations, and they're like, yeah, we're the best around. And you talk to the people that work there, and they're like, yeah, they laid me off without any notice. Said, see you in the spring.
Yep.
And and, you know, like, I have a buddy that worked for a certain paving company. He's like, yeah, Friday night, you'd get done at 6 o'clock and you'd see the low bed flying up the highway, the opposite direction of you, and going, here comes the phone call. Oh, you guys are working tonight. And, oh yeah, you're paving Sunday night too. Great. Cool. Thanks for thinking about me and my family.
No, they don't need to do that. People are disposable, Pat.
That's where I think these companies are starting to realize that's not the truth. I hope they're starting to realize that
people
aren't disposable.
they're starting to realize it, but they're not acting like it. They're going to have to start herding big time to start acting like it. But the companies that do get it now are going to be at an enormous advantage.
When I left that bigger company to go to New Era, I was like, there's a big group of people that were very unhappy there. Very unhappy. Like it was like you'd go on a job and you're like, so are you still thinking about leaving? Yeah, I'm thinking about leaving. You still thinking about leaving? Yeah, I'm just going to leave. So I left. And no one really followed me. I mean, I wasn't expecting people, but I remember this summer, I get a phone call from one of my supervisors that's like, hey, are you happy you left? Are you still happy? I'm like, yeah, I fucking love it. All right, I'm giving my notice. And like, they've lost a lot of people because of the theory that everyone's replaceable and any, you know, like, oh, you know, yeah, you're dating. They were struggling. They had people that they were hiring for more money just to get people in than the guys that were already there doing their job. So then guys were figuring out that they're making more money, which money's not always a thing, but that's kind of insulting. Imagine you're making $25 an hour and then some guy that's never even done a thing for your company, he comes in at $28 an hour.
Yeah.
And then says it to you and you're like, how many hours did I put in here?
Yeah, that's a quick way to... Quick way to build resentment.
And so guys are leaving that way and just a multitude of things. And they've lost a lot of people. So they, from what I understand, are revamping the way they're thinking things, which is sad because how long did it take for you to realize you need to revamp things?
Yeah.
How many, even like the companies you work with that are revamping things, how long did it take? How many guys did they lose until they went, shit, we can't be going this way?
Well, fortunately, I mean, most of the companies we work with, they've kind of realized it before that happens. Yeah. Like Sargent. But it's going to have to change. It's moving in the right direction. I'm optimistic about it all.
The people that think that we're just dirt dummies are so wrong.
Well, we are so just wrong. Dirt dummies, because, though.
But you know, we say dirt dummies in a laughing way. They say dirt dummies or ditch diggers as like, we're still out there with pickaxes digging ditches. And look at those guys with their vests on. They just got out of prison. You know, like my wife works at a school and one of the counselors said, oh, somebody's got to dig ditches when she explained to him what I do. And I was like, I think I need to like educate this woman.
Yeah. But people say that and it's like, I feel bad for you. Like, I don't envy you. It's funny how it's reverse in a lot of cases. Cause it's like, I feel bad for people sitting in an office right now, 40 hours a week, miserable. Like that sounds absolutely terrible.
You know, you hear all these stories. I remember my dad telling me this story about these guys, they were out in Boston on scaffolding in like negative degree weather, doing some framing on a building. And one of the office workers put a sign in the window that said, nice and toasty out here, in here.
Sorry. Yeah.
And one of the guys, and they got a lot of trouble for it. One of the guys wrote $40 an hour out here. I mean, they got a lot of trouble for it, but still like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know,
that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Well, where do people find you, Pat? How do people follow along on your dirt adventures?
Essentially Pat Allen 30. On Instagram. You know, I have a Facebook page. I have a really shitty YouTube page that I don't put any time into, that I don't even look for that. But yeah, Pat Allen 30 is really where it's at.
Okay.
Or just follow Tom. You'll see me. He posts me a lot. Or Craig. I mean, you can't forget about Craig.
Yep.
I want to put that out there, that Craig might not be very vocal or visual out on Instagram, but he's there. And he is one of the best dirt guys I've ever worked with. So, you know, we got to give him a lot of credit. He doesn't get as much credit as sometimes he deserves, but he is a pretty big backbone to the business that I work for. So
absolutely. And to follow Tom, it's all the Dirt Ninja.
The Dirt Ninja. Yeah. And you can DM him asking him for a job. That'd be great.
Yes.
Just a rag. We're not actually hiring anybody, just a rag on him.
Yes.
You know, he loves the IM job DM. Just make sure, you know, make sure you bug him.
Good. That's the kind of change I want to create in the world. Let's just bother Tom.
Yeah. I mean, and to put this out here too is, you know, if anybody has any questions or is looking, I'd love to do something locally with like the high school kids or kids that just don't know what to do with themselves, whether it be getting into dirt or any other trade. I think I'd love to, that's something I'm looking into doing this year. If anybody in the area wants to do the same thing, I know there's a group on Instagram that's starting that's a great movement for, I think, for a lot of these things. But if locally, if anybody's in the New Hampshire, New England area, if you're looking, if you got a kid that doesn't know what to do with themselves coming out of high school, I'd definitely love to talk to them.
All right. Well, I will. I'll let you get back to your wife and kids on this Sunday.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.
I appreciate you taking time to sit in your pickup truck down the street and talk to talk to our enormous audience of about four.
Yeah. Is it count of four? Is it me? Like, so it's three technically?
Well, maybe we're up to five.
I'll probably listen to myself, I think, and just beat my head against the steering wheel going, my God, I sound like an idiot.
Maybe your wife will listen to it too.
Oh, yeah. I think she might, just for, you know, for my sake.
Yeah.
So she can say, man, you rambled a lot.
Oh, this is great. I think people will love it.
Yeah, All right.
Well, Pat, I appreciate it. And with that, I think we're done with another one here. So if you enjoyed it, please share it with whomever. We had a record month in the month of January with downloads, which is really exciting. It's going in a positive direction. We are about to also be making some huge changes to the podcast that I'll be talking about soon, making enormous investments into it. So it's not going away anytime soon. And in theory, it should only keep getting better and better. So please keep sharing it. I appreciate all the shares, all the comments, all the feedback. It's been really cool. And we will see you on the next one.